Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Kerry legend Pat Spillane. Pat is a former Gaelic football pundit and player. His league and championship career at senior level with the Kerry County team spanned over 17 years. Spillane is widely regarded as one of the greatest players to ever lace up a pair of football boots, and is the uncle of current footballers Adrian and Killian Spillane. Sit back and enjoy the show. Keeping you too long, Pat. Thanks a million for coming on
There's
today.
no panic at all, Ian. I'm retired and I've all day to do it.
All day. Very good. I like to bring all my guests that I have on back to the early days, back to their childhood. Do you want to bring me back to yours growing up and stuff? What was life like growing up?
I was one of four children. I was the eldest, and Mick was a year younger than me. Margaret, my sister, and Tommy was the baby. Four of us, born and reared in Timpanogle. We lived in we lived over the bar. My father and mother ran a bar, a shop, and petrol pumps. And life was revolved around the bar because the thing about business in the bar is that the bar was only closed for 2 days every year. Good Friday and Christmas Day. So it was constantly people in behind the counter, running in and out, serving petrol. I suppose it was a big change for my mother. My mother got married in 1953. She was from Killarney, one of the lines of Killarney, the lines of Cluny. And she married my father, Tom. And when she came to Timpanogle in 54 or late 53, I can't remember when it was, there was electricity in Killarney. But there was no electricity at that time in Tipperary, so it must have been like going from Killarney to Tipperary. It was like going from the first world to the third world at the time. But
Right.
we had a great we look we were we had I had two great parents, and we had a great upbringing. We never found wanted for anything. And as I said, a couple of weeks ago, on the Sunday game, my father died in 1964, and I was 8 years of age. Tommy, the youngest, was two, and my mother was left to rear four kids, run a bar, run a shop, run a petrol pump. She sold the car because she couldn't drive, and at that stage, there was no widow's pension, and there was no support from the state for a woman trying to rear four kids. And she was a great woman. She reared the four of us, all did successful in life and their careers and everything like that. And she was just, we always talk about Irish mothers. And my mother was just an unbelievable woman, a woman who parked everything in her life to rear four kids and run a business. Never took a day off, never had staff in the bar. She cooked in the kitchen while the door to the bar was open so that she'd see the customers they want to drink. Never went on a holiday. Was as I said, she was one of the lines of Cluny. So all her three of her brothers played with Kerry. My uncle Dinny captained Kerry in the Polo Grounds in 47, Kerry against Cavan. My uncle Jackie played with Kerry and managed Kerry to win All Ireland. So she came from a huge GAA background. And once my father died, all of that had to be put on the back burner. She never again went to a football field. Never again went to see a match. And the only time she ever saw her three boys play football was on television, playing with Gary. So, and that was something that you sort of you. I talked about the death of my father the day of the All Ireland, and you sort of say it's one regret you always have that your father wasn't alive to see his sons win All Ireland medals, or to see his two grandsons killing in the age, or that even something I regretted that my mother sometime you'd love that your mother would have been at. That she would have been at one of the All-Ireland finals, that we could have that hug and embrace after the game. But that wasn't for my mother. It was all about running the bar and just making sure we were well looked after. So we had a good upbringing. Now, because of working in the bar, she always felt that it's difficult. It's difficult to bring up kids in a bar. So for the three boys, we were pampered and spoiled. We were sent away to boarding school in St. Brendan's, while my sister stayed at home with my mother, Margaret. My sister Margaret stayed at home. My mother went to school in Kildare, but she stayed at home so that she could help in the bar and whatever like that. So she was a great woman. We had a great family upbringing. Like I was born into a family of where the GAA was powerful. My father was a stalwart of the local club. My uncles all played at one stage between two families of Spillanes. They made up 7 of the 15 in the Tipperary team in the 50s. So, So look, I had a great upbringing. We were never found wanting for anything, and passionate GA people. If people say all my memories of youth, and I'm sure with my mother there must have been really hard days and tough days, but I can never remember a bad day. I can never remember a day. I can never remember a day that she was ever down in the dumps. I can never remember a day that we were sad or disappointed or whatever like that. We had a great upbringing. She was a great lady. Never gave out to us, just supported us in everything we did. That was it. So good memories, Ian.
And it's like you said, at 8 years old, you were very young, and it was a massive job for your mom to run everything then. And it's great to look back on it now and to see, like, you know, how good she was, and that, like you said, never had a bad day. And it's great to have them memories now. What would be your first memory of Gaelic football at a young age? Because I presume it kind of revolved around the whole house growing up.
It did, but like I said, you know, I was saying it on the Late Late Show a couple of weeks ago, even though we, like, the three of us played Tom, Mike and myself played football, we carried every level, minor, under 21 and senior, and football was, I mean, my mother, like, during the summer, in the busy months of the summer, when it was busy in the bar, and say we were playing with Kerry, my mother would make sure that we'd be up in bed, her three big lumps of sons would be up in bed and not getting out of bed till 12 or 1 o'clock, so that we'd be fresh for training that night, or that we'd be fresh for the game. And the most amazing thing is we never, even though we were football mad, we never spoke football. It could be the day before an All-Ireland final. It could be having the breakfast before we leave to get to train in Killarney on the Saturday. And the mention of the All-Ireland final, it would never be mentioned. Like in my younger days, like part of my first experience of football, I can remember as a 7-year-old playing under 14, and that must have been 1963. Our early 64 and playing a challenge game against Sneem. And I remember in those days, underage, there was no underage structure, there was no competitive games underage. And I remember my father brought a bunch of lads to play an under 14 challenge. So I did play one game for my father. He brought me on. He started me as a 7-year-old, I'd say now, to be quite honest. It wasn't that I was an exceptional 7-year-old, it was because my father was in charge of the team that I got a game. But I do remember, and it's amazing, you know, Ian, you remember little things. And I can still remember togging off in the back of his, I know it was a Ford Cortina, one of those big old Fords, behind the goal in Sneem, 1963 or else early 64. So at least I can sort of derive some satisfaction that, you know what, he did see me play. Not very well, I can tell you. But as a 7-year-old playing under 14, I don't think you'd be starring in it. But yeah, that was my first experience. But I really didn't get, I never really played. Like my first experience and my first introduction to Gaelic football and competitive Gaelic football was when I went to St. Brendan's. And like in St. Brendan's, football was a religion because You were training every evening. And I had, you know, I there was great priests there, Father Pearson, Father Hegarty, and Father Lennon. And like my first ever coaching, the first time I ever got coached in Gaelic football would have been in St. Brendan's College. And like I was, I was out in that field. I was out in that that football field in St. Brendan's where the community college is now. I was there every evening kicking ball shut to and we got the training, we got the coaching, we got the matches and that was where my career started in St. Brendan's College with those great priests, Father Lennon and Father Pearson, Father Hegarty, coaching me and helped me to develop as a player. And like because of playing with St. Brendan's, I played in an All-Ireland Colleges final too. We were beaten in it. Went in All-Ireland.
Did I be right in saying, Pat, that were you on the team? You won back-to-back Corny Vries?
I'd say we did, yeah. We did win. And I was captain of one of the teams. I was captain 1 year. We were beaten in the semi-final that year. The year before we got to the All-Ireland final and we played St. Pat's at Cavan. And at that stage, there was no real age limit to colleges. And St. Pat's had fellas that were 3 and 4 years older than us now. It was like men against boys. I remember we played We play, and I can still, you know, I don't have many memories, or I'm bad at recalling matches, even Kerry senior game. But I do recall, like, for us playing in an All-Ireland Colleges final, going up the day before, staying outside in the Spa Hotel in Lucan, going to the Phoenix Park on the Sunday morning, the morning of the game. And I remember we did a drill for our a plan from the kick, from the throw-in. And believe it or not, when it came to the game, the plan worked. We won the kick out, and I think it was, I'm not too sure, it was Dan Connor from Kilcoman, whoever scored the point, and we went into the lead, and so we were hammered after. So my first experience in Croke Park was playing in that All-Ireland Colleges final. Had I a great game? No. Did I last the full game? No, I was taken off. So, do you know, if you said that day, gee, that fella will win a load of All-Ireland medals, and he'll win a load of All-Stars, and he'll win man the matches in the All-Ireland finals, geez, you'd be happy. But I don't think anyone would have believed it after seeing that display. But look,
it wouldn't be the money on you.
No, they wouldn't. I think I was about 16 at the time. But look, it was a great learning experience. We went to the All-Ireland Colleges semi-final the following year. Then I played Kerry Minor. And look, you know, the year out of Kerry Minor, I was 19. Then I went into, like, I went to Thomond College, which was the National College of Physical Education at the time. And, like, while St. Brendan's gave me the foundation, the National College of Physical Education was the platform that launched me to, because National College of Physical Education, we were literally full-time professional athletes, you know, training all, you know, doing the proper strength and conditioning, knowing all about the body, knowing all about the stretching, knowing all about the various ways to get fit, what to work on, the programs, and we had coaching. We had the best of coaching. A man called late David Weldrick coached us in Gaelic football, and we were literally like, we were doing, like, in the 70s, in the late 70s, we were doing video analysis of our training sessions in the late 70s, which was unheard of. And like,
boy,
that moved us on to, I mean, that was when I was just, when, like, in 19, I got a chance then. I was playing with Kinmare. We got to the county. We won the county final in 1974. And because of winning the county, was it 74? I'm very bad. Yes, 74, because McKean Edwards left. We won the county in 74, the first time Kinmare District ever won it. And because of playing well in it, I got my chance with the Kerry Seniors in the following year. In late 74, you know, I was a sub against Galway National League game against Galway. And you know, like, you know, when luck comes your way, I think there was 13 or 14 subs, and I was the second last sub. But Johnny Cullity was the manager at the time. He gave me a chance, he brought me on, and I came on for Frank Russell. I replaced Frank Russell, who'd be Mike Frank Russell's father. And you know, I swear to God, I've been very lucky. I've been really lucky in my footballing career. I think every time I played my first match for a team, whether it was St. Brendan's, whether it was Timpanogh or Kinmare District, I think I was lucky enough to pretty much score every time I got the first ball. And the first ball I got against Galway, you know, big chance playing in for Kerry Seniors, I think I scored with my first chance. So, like, I've had a brilliant career, but I've also have to admit, I was very, very lucky.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, well, did you win an under-21 medal against Dublin?
We did, but that was a sort of a side, because we won an under-21 medal. I probably did. I think I won two. It's terrible, Ian. I'm very bad at recalling, and how many National League medals. I look at it, Wikipedia, and it says, and I think they're wrong. I think I've won four. Maybe I haven't. I think I've, and I don't mean, like, I don't mean this, that, geez, I took it for granted, I didn't give a damn about winning. And in my life, on the field and off the field, I've always had the same sort of philosophy, in that once it's gone, it's gone. You know, once you're finished, close the chapter, move to the next one. And I'm not one for, geez, looking back, wasn't that a great victory in that under-21? Where are my under-21 medals? Or same with senior. I don't have them up around the house. They're in the drawer. There's no sort of big things on the wall saying. So I did, I know. But in 75, I suppose it was Dublin. I think we beat Dublin. But like 75 was one of those golden years for Kerry football. Because 75, Mick O'Dwyer, first time, Mick O's young men, a team of bachelors, team that were given no chance. Dublin were the raging hot favourites, and we won our All-Ireland. But not alone did we win the Kerry, the All-Ireland, but the minors the same day. And my brother Mick was playing the minors one day, all out on the same day. And
Brilliant.
the following week, a mixture of the two teams, the minors, the best of the minors, and the under 20 and the seniors that were under 21, we played Dublin the following week and we won in Ireland under 21. And I'd say, genuinely, Ian, I'd say we didn't train. I'd say we never trained more than twice ever in the entire year because we were training with the seniors, the minors were training with the minors, and we literally came together for the All-Ireland final. We won the All-Ireland final. So I'd love to say great memories, but I can't. Maybe I know somebody, some listener will tell us after what we did. I have no memory of it at all, but I think I won two. I think so. But I
It's
don't.
amazing, looking back that you probably took it for granted at the time. Was it that All Ireland? Was that the game that Mickey Ned O'Sullivan go off?
Gosh,
You
they're
let him.
like it was. I mean, it was an amazing experience. Like this, the thing about it, I mean, and I have to say this because it, and I've said like, and I've always said it about, I mean, Mick O'Dwyer. I mean, okay, like there was a couple of things about that 75. Okay, you can say Mick was lucky to that an exceptional bunch of players came along at the same time, which it did. But we were blessed that Mick O'Dwyer was the man in charge because everything I achieved on the football field, everything I achieved on the football field, I have to thank Mick O'Dwyer because one, he gave me the chance to play with the first real chance to play with the Kerry Seniors. Secondly, he gave me the belief that I was good enough. And that's important. And he gave everyone the belief, whether he was talking to Jimmy Dean, the cornerback, or whether he was talking to Jacko at midfield, or whether he was talking to myself for Sheehy, or John Egan. He made you believe that you were the best left corner forward, you were the best right foot forward, you were the best foot forward in the game. He filled you with confidence. And the third thing he did, Ian, and this is a philosophy, the third thing he did, and I've said this so many times when I give talks to football teams or to youngsters. Mick, we were in 10 All-Ireland football finals, and that's a lot of finals. That's a lot of finals, but it's a lot of matches, a lot of team talks. And Ian, there was one thing about his team talk that always stood out. Mick never, ever, ever spoke about the opposition and how we could stop them, the
Really?
opposing. He never spoke about the opposition star players and how we could stop them. It was always filling us. It was always about filling us with belief, believing in ourselves and believing in our teammates. Our glass was always half full, and we took that into every game. That belief, that glass is half full. That belief in ourselves, that belief in our teammates, and that's what carried us through. And I tell you this, Ian, and it is not just as a footballer, I carry that glasses half full philosophy, that belief. I've carried that through my entire life to this very day and hopefully into the future. And for that, I have to thank Mick O'Dwyer. Amazing man, just an amazing man.
Does that go for everything in life? Are you a glass half full man?
And I know I remember the kids. When I retired from school, I remember I got a t-shirt made up and by the kids in school, and they had given the t-shirt with all my usual sayings or the favorite sayings. And like, it was always the glass is always half full was one of them. And I have the I've I swear to God, like little things, do you know if you were writing, if you were reading a newspaper before a game and someone would say, Kerry are going to be beaten. I say, Kerry are going to be beaten, or Spillane's no good. And I'd say, oh, I'm going to prove that wrong. I'm going to, but vice versa, if you said somebody, if you read an article saying Kerry are going to win and Spillane is going to be a star, you'd say, oh, they're right as well. But no, oh, geez, do you know the old faraway fields are greener or tall, Erica Father and the Bohar laugh? Nah, don't buy into that. I believe in myself. I believe in that glass is half full. I'm always positive. Positive, positive, positive. It's something that has carried, like I said, it carried me through my career as a footballer. It carried me through through my life.
And I think that's very, it's very important. Touching on your debut against Galway, everybody saw on the Sunday game when we beat Galway. It's a special fixture in your own life and your your dad passed away was the day after.
It 2 days after, and it triggered. I swear to God, I was on the Late Late Show 10 days ago, and it just there was several triggers. Obviously, Kerry winning my last day at the Sunday game, the four Tipperary lads winning All Ireland medals, my two nephews Adrian and Killing winning, but the big trigger was Kerry Galway, because Kerry Galway, Kerry Galway All Ireland final in my head. I could never get rid of 1964. Couldn't get rid of 1964. It had huge significance for me and my family. And in 1964, my father was a selector. He got a pain in the chest the night before thing. Wouldn't go to the doctor. Insisted on being at the game the following day, because he was a selector. Got another pain in the chest on the Monday, and was dead on a Tuesday night. Never got a chance. Just a massive heart attack and did. So that. Oh, Kerry Galway. It was like, maybe it was my, like I was trying to explain, as youngsters in those days, we didn't grieve. You weren't brought to funerals and anything like that. Now I think they do. And I wasn't brought to funerals. Maybe this was my first time grieving about for my father. Maybe it was. And like, I know as I'm getting older, I know I'm getting more emotional, and I do a bit of crying. But like I said, geez, I never cried on television before in my life, and that was the first time, and probably will be the last time as well. But it was Jesus, it was huge. It was hugely significant. It was hugely significant.
Do you think that there's a kind of a bit of a, even in the early days and even today, that there's a bit of a stigma around men kind of refusing to go to the doctor?
Do you know what? And it's amazing the amount of people that said that have been after the Late Late last Friday week, and they said, and actually, Paul Reid, I saw a tweet from him, even the head of the HSE, who was, and he was saying it's vitally important for men to talk about health issues and to address them. And we're slow. We have that stigma. Oh, I'm a man. I'm a man. And do you know what? I think, like, the road to, I certainly feel we're a lot more vulnerable, and we're a lot, and I suppose I reflect more on life and health now. Because I remember, I mean, like I said, I was part of the Kerry team, the great Kerry team, 75 to 18, 7, 18. I mean, we were at the time an unbelievable bunch of footballers, an unbelievably fit bunch of athletes, gee, as fit of men as you'd get in Ireland. They were unbelievable athletes, unbelievably fit. And yet, we've lost three of that team that have died: John Egan, Tim Kennelly, and Paddy Shea. And you know when three men are taken in their 40s, young three young men are early 50s, three young men are taken, it sort of hits you, because you don't think the Paddy Sheas and the Kerry footballers and that they're infallible and that they'll never die, whatever. And I'll tell you this, it hit home to me that we are, we're no different than anyone else. We're vulnerable to everything. And I think COVID made us realize just how vulnerable we are to a hidden illness or a hidden disease. So I think it's important, if there's a message that I got from that I gave from the Late Late, or important in talking about and talking here today with you about my father, is the need for men to rid themselves of the stigma of not complaining and not seeking help. Go out there, seek help. Seek help.
Absolutely. I think it is important, and hopefully men take a message from that the story. I want to touch on you did you play a bit of time with Ireland in the International Rules Series?
I did, but I was I did. I actually I played in two series. I went to Australia under Kevin Heffernan, and I also played with Ireland under Eugene McGee. OJD, or we went down to Australia. There was three violent matches. It was violence. It was just, and to be quite honest, I love my county and I love my country, but I wasn't prepared to die or get maimed for my country. And to be quite honest, I wasn't the bravest man in Australia. So, and in fairness to Kevin, after the first trial game, it was played south of Perth, and Heffernan said, called me into his room, and he says, "What do you think of this game?" And geez, I said, to be quite honest, Kevin, I said, I was just back from the cruciate. I didn't feel comfortable and didn't feel safe. And he didn't pick me for the three games, and I was the runner actually. So they were violent games. They were just, and I remember like people say, "I like and, it, and a fight." Do you remember like the Australians, the big bad Australians, and they were blamed for everything. But I'll tell you this: it takes two to tango, and the Irish fought fire with fire. And I remember one of the things. And I think we ex there was two things about it. First of all, Heffernan looked at in Australian rules and in the compromise rules, obviously you were allowed to pick the ball off the ground, and there's a sort of unwritten rule in Aussie rules that, you know, that the guy is allowed to pick the ball up off the ground without being challenged serious. And Heffernan, the one thing Heffernan said when they're going down to pick the ball off the ground, draw a kick on the ball, and of course kicking is considered like they don't mind fighting, but kicking they reckon is the lowest form of violence. Oh, they hate it. So that was the first thing. You kicked every ball that they were going down to pick up. Geez, they were very angry with that. But the second thing then we expected was in 1985, Ireland played Australia in Páirc Cliff, and I wasn't playing that year because it was just after the Ireland. And if you'll Google it, you'll see it. Bomber was playing for Ireland, and Bomber got in a row with one of the Australians. And the big thing about the Australians is when a row develops, it's all in. So you can still remember, I can still picture the scene in Páirc Cliff, like, so all in. So Bomber starts a row, or the Australian starts a row with Bomber. It's one versus one, but within 10 seconds, it's now 15. But unfortunately, it was 15 Australians versus poor old Bomber, who was left abandoned on his own. And Heffernan said, the one thing Heffernan said, right, this is never going to happen again. If something happens, it's all in. And I remember in the first, and this is what's probably started everything, in the first test I think it was Melbourne, but in the first test like that, there was a minor incident when, say, maybe an Australian pushed an Irish kid, but just fairly minor. But like that, it was so ingrained into the Irish team. Like, if something happens, lads, it's all in. And the next minute, something minor happened. Jeez, all the Irish weighed in, all the Australians weighed in. And for 2 weeks, that's all to us, was belting the living daylights out of each other. But anyway, I played again in Dublin the following year, didn't I? I think I was the top scorer, but no, it was a game that was like, the thing about it was, because there was no real rules to it, there was no governing body. So the bottom line is, if you murdered the fella on the field or killed him or something, there literally wasn't a punishment by losing by not being play another compromise rule game maybe next year. Whereas, like, were you suspended from the G, or was an Australian suspended from the Australian rules? No, there weren't. So there was freedom to act the complete cowboy.
So there's a bit of crack to all that, and you got a bad land when you were back to the GAA rules. I meant to ask you, do you know, was it when you won the All Ireland in 75 when Mickey Ned got injured? You were only, was it 19 at the time?
19, yeah.
You
Sure,
got
look,
the
that
chance to lift the Sam Maguire, did you?
sure, Ian. I mean, like, as a footballer in Kerry, as a footballer, you want, as a GA person, you want to be an inter-county player, represent your county. That's the first huge honor. You then, the next huge honor you can achieve is to win an All-Ireland medal. And finally, the biggest honor you could have is to walk up the steps of the Hogan Stand and to accept the Sam Maguire as captain of the winning team. And in my first, like, this was, I mean, if, do you know, the ad, if Carlsberg did this, everything, do you know, well, if Carlsberg did All Ireland final debuts for me, I mean, do you know, we won, I scored a few pints, and because of the injury to Mickey Ned, I was the vice captain, and because I went up and I accepted the cup. It was, I mean, like, sure, after that, like, you know, You could have retired in on the spot because I always remember like the old Irish wasn't good, and I always, because nowadays the speech is written out by, there's so many in the back room now. There's a fella in the back room team to write a speech. But I always remember doing anything. I was saying to one, I said, could you please ask the head steward that brought me up? He said, what is the Irish for on behalf of, on behalf? And oh yeah, and I can remember my speech. Tánás orm an cornish a glacadh son fhoireann curí, and I can tell you this without fear. And then I quick word in English, and I can tell you this without fear of contradiction. When the worst All-Ireland winning speeches are compiled over the last 150 years, mine was the worst. But anyway, it was a dream, gee, absolute dream, absolute dream.
And like you said, you could have retired in the spot. You accomplished it all. Do you know, when you said you were only back from the cruciate injury before the international rules, how did you, because I was reading up on that, it was a possible career ending one, was it? How did you deal with that, you know, with injury on the sideline for so long?
But I'm glad you asked me that because I mean I got injured in 1981. I was only 26 years of age, so I lost two. I was just coming into my prime, so I felt my two best years of football. I reckon I lost them because I was out injured. But like nowadays, you know, like I was talking to a father yesterday, and his young lad, his 14-year-old young lad, had just had his anterior, his cruciate ligament operation, and I started to say, like, and he, there was a man with a daughter in the waiting room. He said his daughter was just after getting done. She was 13. Now, cruciate ligaments, that's, I mean, they're so common nowadays at all ages. But
They are.
the great thing about cruciate ligaments nowadays is that you're back within 6 to probably 9 months. When my cruciate was done in 1982, in 1981. I was told that I'd never again play football.
Boy.
I'd never again play football because in 1981, if you did your cruciate ligament, that was it, your sporting career. That anyone in Ireland at that stage who had ruptured had to give up sport. And I always remember, to the day I die, I always remember getting an arthroscopy done in Cork, in the hospital in Cork. And the surgeon coming in with Dr. Con Murphy, great friend of mine, the Cork team doctor, great friend of mine, great mentor that looked after. And he came in to give me the result of the arthroscopy. And I said, well, what do you find, doctor? And he said, you've ruptured your anterior cruciate ligament. I said, is that serious? He said, it's very serious. You'll never play football again. Like at 26, 27 years of age, when you're told that, that's tough. And by Jesus, do you know what? Dr. Con Murphy came in then about a half an hour later, and in fairness, he tried to do a few passes. But it was Dean. But do you know, it goes back to Ian, what I'm talking about again, that positivity. Jeez, I wasn't, even though no one in Ireland had ever done come back playing sport with a cruciate in. And this is only like this is only 40 years ago, Ian. Like no one knew. And I said, I'm going to try to find out. And I'm going to try to find out, can it be done? Can you have an operation to do? And anyway, between the jig and the reel, my uncle, the late Canon Michael Lyon, he was chaplain to Glasgow Celtic. Great man. And you know, you saw the photograph lately of the Kerry boys over in Glasgow Celtic, David Clifford. And we'd be, the Spillanes and the Lyons would be huge Celtic supporters. And the Canon would come, Canon was the chaplain to Glasgow Celtic for 20, 30 years. He was the parish priest in Parkhead, St. Michael's Parkhead, which is the parish of where Glasgow Celtic is based. He had his own seat behind the dugout reserved for him for every home match. Every Monday morning, the Canon would play golf with Jock Stein, who was the famous Celtic manager at the time, and the Celtic team doctor, Dr. Fitzsimmons. At the end of every season, Ian, Canon Michael Lyon would bring his car over. And he'd have the car full of all the old Glasgow Celtic training gear, the boots, the togs, the socks. So the Lyons of Cluny, all the Lyons around Killarney and the Spillanes here, we for 10 years were kitted out from head to toe in the Celtic gear that had been worn by the first team players during the season. But that was the, so anyway, that was the Celtic connection. So we got on to my uncle, Canon Michael, and he got on to the doctor, the Celtic doctor. And by the gas part about it, didn't we find out that a former Celtic player had just come back from a cruciate? A guy called George Burley, who subsequently managed, I think he managed Scotland. George Burley was the first case they could find of somebody who had just come back playing soccer. He played with Chelsea as well, George Burley did afterwards. He managed with Chelsea as well. But George Burley had come back and playing he after getting an operation. And we found out that there was a guy who had just, an English doctor, surgeon, who had just come back from Colorado. And Colorado, remember, is where the skiing is. So they'd be used to dealing with knee injuries and whatever. But Dr. David Dandy, he had come back from Colorado and that he was based now in Cambridge. He had done George Burley's operation. It was a success. So do you know what I did, Ian? I found a contact for David Dandy in Cambridge. I went over, had a consultation, and he agreed to operate. I went over my own. I paid, I'd say, certainly, I paid, I'd say, half it myself out of my own pocket. That's how determined I was. There was no guarantees, but I said, if George Burley can come back playing, and again, going back to what I was talking about, this positivity, this believing I can do it, and I came back, and I had the operation in Cambridge with Dendy. Now, in those days, you weren't back till a year and a half before you'd be back. And that's not, and but the second thing was when I was in hospital, didn't I get an infection 2 days after the operation? And what my mother and my family didn't know is that I was in intensive care for 2 days because of an infection I picked up during the operation. And when I came out of hospital, there wasn't a bit of me there. But anyway, you know, there was no guarantee it was going to be a success. There was no guarantee I'd come back playing. But you know, I vowed that I would train harder and harder and harder and harder. And I pushed my body to an extreme. And I know I've told everyone the stories, you know, like I used to, I did lunatic stuff, Ian, to get my legs. I wanted, so did you, because with a cruciate, your knee is weak always. So you compensate by having the muscle so strong around it, the quad and the hamstring and the calf. And I did weight training before anyone was doing serious weight training. I'd run around the field down in Tipperary, 40 laps with 10-pound weights. And you know when you're with 10-pound weights around my ankles and you'll be running around in a wet, miserable day. And you know that monkey in your head saying, ah, this is a waste of time, this is a waste of time. But you know that other monkey in my head, that Mickey monkey was telling me, yeah, you'll get back, you'll get back, you'll get back. And you know what? I got back fitter, faster, and stronger than I was prior to the thing. But I tell you this, I came back a different, the one of the big regrets I had when I was out injured was, it's amazing what little thing, like when you're out, you're out, you're, when you're out of sight, you're out of sight, you're past achieving. No one was, there was no one on the phone to me. Are you all right? Or how are you getting on? You were on your own. But the one thing I remember is you saying, geez, when I was winning All-Irelands, I never celebrated. I never celebrated. But I said, do you know, if I'll ever win an All-Ireland ever again, geez, I'll appreciate those victories and I'll savor those victories and I'll celebrate. And I did. And geez, I had, I don't know, I had another six or seven, I had a bonus 5 or 6 more years. I had three extra All-Irelands and three more All-Stars. And it was just, but it was, there were tough days, but geez, I don't know. And you're on your own, but like I
Before
said,
we finish up, I don't want to be keeping you long more. What do you think about the current Kerry team now, like Adrian and Killian, and they're obviously they're flying and David Clifford and stuff, they're the whole thing, talent running through the whole team. How do you think they're faring out?
Well, I mean, this year was like this year was the big year. This year was, this is why when RT wanted me to select my moment of the year, was Seanan Shea's winning free against Dublin, because that was the day the monkey was off our back. Because until we beat Dublin in a championship match in Croke Park, we were always going to be the
Stephen
bridesmaids.
Clarkson done it enough times to us, didn't
Yeah,
they?
he did. And you know, this was a huge match, and we knew that there was talented. We know about the talent that was coming through. But that doesn't necessarily, you know, when you're hitting the crossbar so often, and you know, we were terrible against Tyrone the year before. We were terrible against Cork. We should have beaten Dublin the year before in the drawn game. Do you know, like, and you start to say that's three championships we possibly left behind. And you start to say, oh, geez, I thought this year was make or break, because if they didn't win this year, I
Yeah.
think I might never win. Now, can I see them win more, Ireland? Oh, I can, yeah. They're very talented. Except, will they win the same? Will they dominate Gaelic football like the Dubs did for six in a row or whatever like that? No, I don't think so. They're capable of winning two or three more, no doubt about it. The only thing I look around now is that, gee, the gap is closed. There's a few, you know, there's four or five or six contenders you could say, gee, there's Galway and Mayo. They're not
Yeah.
far behind. Dublin aren't far behind. Tyrone won't be gone away. Derry are improving.
Derry
Do you know?
I thought Derry were the dark horses last year.
Armagh are an improving team. Donegal might get reorganized under a new manager. So is there a big gap between Kerry and the rest? No. And you only just look at Dublin. And you look at Dublin. No. Jack McCaffrey retired. Paul Mannion gone, could come back. Con O'Callaghan injured, and we fell over the line, winning by a point against a team without Con. If Con was there, who knows? But
Yeah.
can this? There, look, you know, I was a Paddy Shea always talked about. Is the grain of rice that can tip a grain of rice can tip the scales, and this year I just thought the grain of rice came. Jack came in, who was a winner. And Jack brought in Paddy Talley. And, like, you know, the sign of a great manager or a great leader or a great CEO of a company is that you delegate, but you bring in the best of expertise and the best of talent. You realize your own shortcomings. You realize you need more expertise around you. And Jack was very sharp this year. He's a different Jack as a manager. From the first time, he's now realized that you have to have expertise around you. You've got to delegate, and he did. And he brought in great coaches, but he brought in Paddy Talley, brought in Tony Griffin, you know, and they're the grains of sand. And you know, you look around, and there's, you know, every year there's another half a dozen players that are capable of making it to scene in the next year or two. So the future is bright,
Absolutely.
but, like, you know, when you win, there's a target on your back, and everyone is out to dethrone you. So.
Lastly, now I just want to, obviously you're finished up in the Sunday game, and I suppose you're getting pestered for interviews off people. Do you have any plans for the future that you can share? Are you still writing
I will.
the
I have a book out next year, Ian. I've already done two books, but I have a book out next year, and it'll be a book about everything, not just football. It'll be about my time as a teacher, my time working on rural affairs, my time on the Sunday game. So that'll be out this time next. It'll be out this time next year, the book. And you know, like I said to people, you know, like I see life as just a series of as a book, and as a series of chapters. I've closed one particular chapter, but when you close one chapter, you know, I'm opening another chapter. I there's a blank page. I'm going to write a new chapter. I haven't gone to the end of the road. I've gone to a bend in the road, and I'm going to go off in another direction. Could I be on television again? Who knows? I never say no to nothing. But you know, the great thing, and I've been very lucky. And I was saying this to Ryan Tubby the other. Like, I've been like, there was a famous English politician called Enoch Powell one time, and he said, the careers of all politicians inevitably end in failure because they stay too long and they're voted out. And it's true of sports people as well, that, you know, like, the careers of the majority of sports people usually end in failure because very few sports people get their retirement right.
Yeah.
They're always going for the last hurrah. Every sportsman, whether it's a footballer or soccer, always thinks, gee, there's another year in me. There's a last hurrah. And unfortunately, most times there isn't.
Pat, come here. Thanks a million for coming on that one. I really appreciate you
It's a
taking the
pleasure.
time.
It's a pleasure, Ian. I'm absolutely privileged. And like I said, I think you're the only. I have to do something on television tomorrow night, all right, with the Tonight Show. But I've refused all podcast requests, all fucking interviews. So, I couldn't refuse you, and especially a man who's been nominated for a national award. I know this is a top radio show.
Thanks so much, Pat, and hopefully everything goes well, and looking forward to the book and everything. So thanks a million.
And the program gets it right. You are a standout. Well done. Keep it going.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Pat Spillane for coming on today and having a chat about his own career and what a colourful career it was in the green and gold colours, and he broke records and he's one of the regarded as one of the greatest of all time to play the game, and I'm delighted that I got the chance to have a chat with him today, because he's someone that anybody in Kerry would look up to if they're a football fan, and I appreciate his time. So thanks a million today to Pat. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.